I'm not as tall as Dutch men. Brilliant. Peter, thank you very much. And thank you, Erwin, and lovely to listen to Erwin too. And thank you, Kuno and Klingendahl, for inviting me here today. It's always a pleasure to come to the Netherlands. I always feel rather happy here. And some people say I have a very Dutch name. I don't know if that's true. But it's great to be here. And thank you for being Dutch NGOs. Thank you for being the Dutch government. Thank you for doing everything you do to keep humanity alive as an operating value in international relations and foreign policy and geopolitics. It's a very important thing. So I've been asked to talk about the crossroads, and I've been asked to think about you and us as the humanitarians at a crossroads. And so I feel bound to stick with our crossroads metaphor. But of course, that crossroads thing always gives us a sense of absolute choice. We can either go right, we can either go left, or we can go straight on. Usually we can't go backwards, but maybe we can. We could go backwards as well. But of course, often in life, we don't really work on these extreme choices. We're often wiggling somehow and going up rather windier routes as we try and find our way. But I'm going to stick with the crossroads. I'm going to do what I'm told. So let's pretend that we're at a crossroads. And I'm going to therefore offer us, as we stand in the crossroads, three scenarios of where we might go. And I'm also going to be very realistic about the spirit of the age, because we do have a new spirit of the age now. And we've heard a bit of it described by Erwin. We're back in a multipolar world with great powers like China and India, Indonesia, taking their rightful place again in the world as civilizations, as states. We've got a swing back from the right, which is partly the liberal fault for probably giving too easy a target with the creation of this woke identity. And that's pushing it back, so the pendulum is moving in our own politics. So it's an exciting time. It's a time of change, and I think I would ask you to be excited. I mean, it's the job of humanitarians to embrace the spirit of their age and think, what can we do? So let's stand at the crossroads and reflect. And I'm going to suggest first we take time at the crossroads to think, where have we come from? What's the road behind us? Then I'm going to suggest one road is the war road. We could take the war road and war humanitarianism, which we might call humanitarianism 1.0. Or we could take the climate road on the left, which I'm going to suggest is humanitarianism 2.0, because that's the book I'm selling at the moment. And then there's another road, of course, straight on. And I'm going to call that the unknown road. And I'm going to think about what that might look like, because actually we can't really see it very clearly at the moment. So let's start as we stand in the middle of the crossroads and think of the road behind us. Where have we come from? And it's an amazing journey. I mean, as I stand here in front of you today, our ancestors, where we come from, that long road has been quite extraordinary. The 18th, 19th century embrace of this idea of humanity, when we all decide that actually we want to be a single moral community around the world where every human has equal moral value somehow. That's an idea that goes way back in time, 4,000 years, in all our religious traditions, in all our philosophies of various kinds. But people try and really politicize it in the last 200 years back down the road, and that's amazing. And that is where we come from, and that's not a given. I was in the African American Museum in Washington 2 weeks ago, and the first three floors of that museum are about transatlantic slavery, where there's no question that these people are humans like us. It's been a huge challenge to achieve this sense of a common humanity, of equal value. And in that process, we have invented humanitarianism, which is, you know, pretty interesting, quite a good thing to have done down one road. We discovered this idea of the wounded soldier and prisoners of war, and we recognized them, and that was Henri Dunant's legacy. We then, in World War I, we then saw the civilian population for the first time, and we began to use that word later, non-combatants, civilians. And in my view, the greatest ever humanitarian of the 20th century, Herbert Hoover, who later became American president, a great Quaker, invented modern food relief, modern ideas of humanitarian diplomacy, and the civilian. We then had children. We suddenly recognized children as well as important, and Save the Children, Eglantine Jebb and others. And displaced people, refugees, we invented these terms. Janssen, the great Norwegian, became a passionate person about these things and a great humanitarian diplomat and activist. In the process of that whole change, human rights emerged. We invented human rights as a world and international humanitarian law that's so important in The Hague and in Geneva and in St. Petersburg in Russia in that period. And then in my lifetime, we've gone on and invented these humanitarian principles. That's in the 60s. When I was four, Jean Pictet and people invented the current fundamental humanitarian principles we had. He did it in his PhD in Geneva. We'll have seven, he said. And we'll start with humanity, which hadn't existed before. So we've done all that. And then, you know, also code of conduct, sphere standards, all sorts of things. So if we look back at the road we've come, it's been a boom period. And incredible growth, incredible elaboration of this idea of a common humanity. And it's achieved extraordinary scale. When I joined Save the Children in 1983 in England, we had a budget. We were working in an old school we'd been given as our headquarters, and we had a budget of 17 million sterling. Today, Save the Children around the world has a budget of 1.2 billion sterling. So the scale's been extraordinary. Huge expansion of liberal Western humanitarianism. Others would say neoliberal humanitarianism. And we've saved many lives. We've created so much knowledge about the details of suffering and need. We've developed so many new fields of practice, things that weren't invented when I started. And there are so many humanitarians around the world as well. But in a funny way, for me anyway, because I'm possibly the oldest in the room, we're back where we started. And as I stand in the crossroads, there's an extraordinary moment of déjà vu, because I started on the Sudanese-Ethiopian border and then the first intifada in the occupied territories. Gosh, we're back where we started. So there is déjà vu, but that's realism. You know, there have always been 100-year wars, and there will always be 100-year wars in different parts of the world. And the world keeps moving around like that. So we stand in the middle with a great sense of achievement, with a sense of realism about the world. We can't solve it. It changes all the time. And also with this sense of a new spirit of the age that is multipolar. Europe is feeling vulnerable. It's increasing its defense budgets. It's worried about its supply chains. We also have questions about our legitimacy as we stand in the middle of the crossroads. We have self-criticism and other criticism. Certain delegitimizing forces are criticizing us as Western infiltrators, always spreading liberal values, always interested in moving around the world to continue what we always did, which was imperialism. So we have that delegitimizing critique of us, and some of us share it, and some of us want to really, some people want to expand it, so we feel completely disempowered. And I think we've also maybe been delegitimized by becoming too rich. We're too rich as agencies, we're more like multinational corporations, we pay, not necessarily in your organizations, a lot of agencies pay each other too much and they travel business class. It's not a good look when you're worried about poverty and suffering. So that's another reason we're delegitimized. We're too bureaucratic, we've got too many staff, we are too chunky and fat and looking a bit greedy. We also have new instructions, but actually just to end on that, so the old question which was always asked when I began in the 80s, where does the money really go? And that question is alive today because of the kind of corporations we are. So we've also, in this new middle of the road, we've got new instructions. from our main investors. And in Holland, in the Netherlands, that means you're going to get less money. You've got to prioritize. And we think you should prioritize in Dutch stuff that is important to us, that we're good at, like water, food, and health. Why not? Makes sense. We should probably listen to that. You've got to prioritize about something. So that's part of being in the middle of the road. Okay, there's a new reality. We need to focus, probably. And the other thing, as we stand in the middle of the road, not everyone thinks we're important anymore. We looked very important in the 90s, the 2000s. We're not looking very important now, actually, because business can do a lot of what we do. Business has been proved to raise people out of poverty. Other things count. And maybe we have an agenda that's a bit, you know, off in terms of the new conservatism. So this is a good middle. It's a good place that you are today, thinking. You can and must use this moment in the middle of the crossroads of history to decide what you're going to do next. To sort yourselves out, probably with cuts, with reorganization, with remissioning, with new mandates, with deeper commitments to localization and national capacity building, and with a bit of focus now. Because you've invented a whole world in which you could do everything, but you can't do everything as individual organizations. And as you stand in the middle of the road, don't be gloomy. I'm a great believer, you know, the world is always like this, you know, it's not unprecedented, it's not disastrous, you know, climate change maybe, AI is, but all this political churn, you know, some people win, some people lose for a bit, then people win again, and then this is what happens in the world. So be firm in what you want to do as humanitarians, be firm in your liberal values, don't get too attached to sort of things that you know these new conservatives are going to hate. Stand for what really counts in life, for basic freedoms, for good lives, for ends to suffering, things like that. So, the three roads, if we're in the middle of the road, we've just heard the podcast, if we're in the middle of the road, what can we do next? What are the three roads? So the first road, I'm going to call the war road. It's where we really started. Choose war. There's usually enough of it. Irwin says there's probably going to be a lot more of it. So choose war and go down it and become really good at it. But don't constantly pretend you're doing other things and then whenever there's a war, swerve towards the war. Because what happens every time, you get a lot of these multi-mandate organizations who are doing creative things, they're trying to work on poverty, development, climate, and the moment there's a war, all the gazelles swerve off and charge towards the war because there's money, profile, identity, etc. Decide if you want to swerve, and if you swerve, commit to swerving and stay as a war agency. Specialise there. And that's very much humanitarianism 1.0, if you like. War humanitarianism is complicated. It requires special skills. You've got a lot in this room. Safety, security, protection, law-based thinking, creative programming, avoiding complicity and all these things. It's tough. It's very skilled. It's an honourable form of humanitarianism. And in my view, as you may know, you can either do it as a neutral humanitarian agency in war or a non-neutral one. And you can back humanitarian resistance movements as you see them that are important. So you could choose the war road. Or you could go down another road, and although Irwin didn't talk about the climate emergency, you could choose the climate road. And you can choose climate and what I'm calling the earth emergency. So stop rushing towards every war. Focus on climate-related disasters. Think hard about what climate emergency, what climate change means for the whole earth, for all life, for the ability to save life in a changing earth when it's hotter, wetter, more destructive. What are we going to do? This is a really important road. You need to rewrite your mandate and your mission, in my view, towards an earth emergency. You need to recognize the need as humanitarians to go beyond the human. Don't just think of working with human bodies and these big lists you make of human bodies and you then get to the end and say it's 350 million individual human bodies in need this year, OCHA. Please give us money for that. Think about all life and redefine your understanding of humanity, because humanity is not a sort of super species that floats freely above the earth. It is part of the earth community. There is no human life without other life. You cannot save humans without showing humanitarian concern for the whole earth and saving other life as well. And you know this as humanitarians, because any one of you who has tried to save a human life has usually done it by trying to plug that human life back into nature, back into water, back into crops and food for sustenance, back into materials that give them shelter. You're always in your work plugging humans back into nature. And if we're honest about humanity, it's not a single identity. We are always hyphenated identities. We are water humans and air humans and wheat humans and rice humans. If you want to save life in the earth emergency, become earth humanitarians, if you like, and change your mission to an all-life approach where you're trying to do nature-based solutions. You recognize nature as important in this earth and in this emergency. And you work recognizing human needs, nature's needs, recognizing human agency to protect nature and nature's agency to protect humans. And you have a whole new approach. And that is what I'm calling the climate road or the earth emergency road. And that would see you changing your unit of analysis as humanitarians from individual human lives, that human body in need, to a landscape approach, where you say, what does this landscape need for life? And it'll see you merging your organizations with ecological organizations and saying, we're going to merge with WWF, or we're going to merge with this, we're going to become an ecological humanitarian organization, and we're going to work with a landscape approach. That's the 21st century for us. And then you become good at anticipation, adaptation, nature, humans, the mutualism of life on the earth, and you work there. And that is humanitarianism 2.0, the other road. And at this point, you will hear some siren voices singing into your ear. Those siren voices will be David Miliband and the ICRC as well, the IRC. They'll be saying, no, because where you need to work most is where conflict and climate coincide. And that group of 770 million people, that's where we all need to be. Those are the poorest of the poor. Come and work there and you can do both. Don't listen. I don't think that's the answer. I think that is wrapping up two problems in a fundraising package, putting a big ribbon on it, saying to the donors, look, we can do both, just give us all the money. But that's a small part of the world at the moment. And frankly, if you're going to try and do both in war, it's going to be really messy, really violent, really difficult, probably a waste of money. And at the end of the day, you'll be still involved with trying to relocate people, displaced people. That'll be your challenge, not real climate work. So, don't listen. And then the third road, the war road, the climate road, the other road. This I'm calling the unknown road, because I can't see up it. I can't see where it goes. I don't know what it could be. And you're going to have to think about it and work it out. Is it a closed road? Is the road ahead closed? Is it a road which you must close your organization? Celebrate the past, but say that was it. It was a beautiful flower that blossomed for 100 years. We're going to close it now. There are other things to do. Is it a road of solidarity and freedom where you need to go more covert as NGOs and work to support others around the world in very dangerous, politically authoritarian areas, like people did a lot when I started in the 70s and 80s. You're supporting others who are struggling in dangerous politics, with notions of community development, freedom, poverty reduction, etc.? Or is it a mobility road, where in fact you decide that the big human trend you need to work on is human movement, and you need to really specialise and become really good at mobility? You focus on migration. You focus probably increasingly on managed retreat, which is probably going to see a lot in Florida, where people say, I'm not living here anymore, I'm moving. And the government will sometimes help them move, sometimes they'll move spontaneously. We're going to see a lot of spontaneous retreat and relocation, or government-organized retreat. That could be part of your mobility road. Maybe it's a European road. Maybe you say, actually, floods in Poland, heat waves, there's so much to do in our own country, inequality, poverty. Maybe we should just work in Europe. Maybe we should be European NGOs, Dutch NGOs working in Europe, teaming up with ECHO, doing more civil protection, really getting Europe sorted out, on water, food, and health. Maybe it's a multi-directional road where you go up it, and actually you need, it branches out and you keep needing to go all over the place. And it's a road where you set off up the Silk Road to China, to India, to other parts of the world which are now rising and important. And you go and work with them and talk to them about what is humanitarian aid? What are you thinking about it? What can we do together? What are you going to do? What can you teach us? How can we create a new idea of multipolar humanitarianism together somehow? So, that's just some thoughts. And I suppose I'm asking us today to take the middle of the road moment seriously. And whichever road you choose, make your organisations cheaper. Make your organisations really good at what they decide to do. And make your organisations always increase national capacity and local capacity. Thank you.